No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So feel free to call in if you have a question, and I hope you will tonight at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBS, that's boyboysamradio.com. Welcome to the show. This is one of our last show. This is our last show of 2024. I had planned to talk about the new vamped show, the revamped show that we plan to start on January 12th. And I will talk about that a little bit. First I want to talk about a man that I worked for in 1980, President Jimmy Carter. As you probably have heard, he passed away today at the age of 100. James Earl Carter was born on October 1, 1924. He grew up in a house in Plains, Georgia, little town in Plains, Georgia, with no running water. He didn't have running water till he was a teenager. He was a child of the Depression and knew firsthand what it was like to be an American with hardships, He worked hard to try to reduce the deficit and inflation and the burden on working Americans. He was a civil rights leader of the highest order, and I was proud to have worked for him. Many people have argued that he wasn't a very good president. I don't know that I could argued too much against that. He did have his problems, but he was a very, very decent human being, and it was my honor to work for him. You know, he didn't retire to go play golf or to earn money for himself or to sell Bibles or steak knives or Bitcom or any other damn thing. He retired and built houses for the homeless, for people with poor in Habitat for Humanity, the Carter Center, which he established, which has gone on for more than 40 years now, has monitored elections all around the world, preserving democracy for millions of people. They also work to get rid of the guinea worm in Africa, which was a horrible problem. I don't know what you know about this disease, but if you look it up on the internet, you'll see what a horrible parasite guinea worms are and how they affected people's lives all over Africa. And the Carter Center intervened and brought worldwide attention to the problem, put money into it, and has pretty much eradicated it in most places. So, you know, this is a man that worked his whole life to make the world a better place for everybody, not just for himself. I hope you're listening, President Trump, because Donald Trump made a statement today about his passing, of course, Carter's passing. I'm not going to repeat it because he figured out a way to make it about Trump. You know, I mean, the guy's just amazing. He can't even be magnanimous at a time like this. Anyway, we've lost one of my heroes today. Rest in peace, President Carter. You're a great man. And I was honored as a young man to work for you. I want to talk about a few of his accomplishments because we often talk about the things that he didn't do. First, I want to talk about his establishment of diplomatic relations with China. You know, it was actually his predecessor, Richard Nixon, who opened up the door for China. It was the first time we had kind of normalized relations. But it was really Jimmy Carter, through his negotiations and his effort in foreign affairs, that formalized diplomatic relations with China. We opened an embassy. They opened an embassy here. And we've had, an establishment of relations with what has now become one of the great economic powers of the world. Thank you for that, President Carter. He negotiated the Middle East Treaty. We all remember between Israel and Egypt. We all remember Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat and Kennedy, and Carter, the pictures of the three of them, right? If you're old enough to remember that. But that was the first negotiation or establishment of a treaty between these two countries who only 20 years earlier had been at war with each other. He also instituted the SALT II nuclear treaty with the Soviet Union, which banned the use of certain weapons and has made the world a safer place. And he turned over the Panama Canal to Panama, control the canal to Panama. We've recently heard President-elect Trump say that he wants to take Panama back. Now, I'm not exactly sure how he plans on doing that, whether he plans on sending the Marine Corps to invade Panama, but it actually is not our option to take back the Panama Canal. It now belongs to Panama as sovereign territory. You know, they're in the Senate the other day, they said this was all bluster. He really, this is like a warning to Panama. It's not it's not something he actually wants to implement. But, you know, we'll get on to Trump in a minute. He's such a bully. But I just want to talk a few more minutes about Jimmy Carter. What an amazing man this was. You know, he's a peanut farmer, became governor of Georgia, the 39th president. Now, if you're not old enough to remember, he became president in the wake of the malfeasance from another Republican, Richard Nixon. Of course, we all remember Watergate. If you don't remember it personally, you probably read about it in the history books. I actually worked at the Democratic National Committee shortly after the Watergate affair. I worked with a lot of people at the DNC who actually worked at the Watergate. But I worked for the DNC when we had moved from the Watergate to 1700 Massachusetts Avenue. But that was shortly, probably, 5 or 6 years after the whole Watergate thing. But we elected Jimmy Carter, who was a very honest man. Obviously, he spent his whole life working for poor people and for people that needed help around the world. And he was a very decent, honest man. And we elected him in the wake of all the sleaziness that was the Watergate affair. But it didn't last. He was president one term. And then in 1979, the Iranians took our embassy hostage in Iran and took all the employees and held them as hostages for 444 days. I worked at the Democratic National Committee on the Jimmy Carter reelection campaign during this period. And I can tell you, every day we watched to see what was going on with the hostages. We assumed that if we could get the hostages released or somehow rescue the hostages, that Jimmy Carter would be elected, reelected. As it turned out, there was a horrible, horrible incident called the Eagle in July of 1979. The Eagle Claw rescue, I'm sorry, that was in July of 1980. And there was a midair collision. The special forces group that was sent over to liberate the hostages crashed. Many of them died. We were caught with our pants down, so to speak. And it was a horrible incident, which may have really cost him the election. He tried in desperation to figure out a way to get the hostages out. And, of course, the hostages were released right after Ronald Reagan was elected. So one of the things I want to talk about for a minute is the similarities of 1980 and 2024 in terms of the election. The same thing happened to us in 1980 that just happened in 2024. The Democrats lost the Senate, they lost the House of Representatives, and they lost the presidency. And they lost it again, not by much of the popular vote, but they lost it very soundly in the Electoral College. The Electoral College, you know, we're going to have a show on the Electoral College, because the Electoral College has to go. It's a ridiculous idea. It was brought into existence to satisfy a handful of southern states when they were putting the final touches on the Constitution in order to ensure that those states had an adequate amount of power in the national legislature. You know, when we finally decided to have a federal centralized government, nobody was sure how powerful it would be. We actually thought the states would be more powerful than the federal government, but they all wanted a piece of the federal government. They all wanted, everybody wanted it, you know, to be equal in the federal government. So this provision was slid in at the very end of the Constitution, and it really is crazy that 11 states in the United States decide who the president of the United States is going to be. We call them the Sacred 11. So just think about it. A candidate can lose in 39 states and still become president of the United States. It's just ridiculous. And we lost soundly in the Electoral College. And the same thing happened. We lost all three. We lost both houses of Congress and the presidency. Now, of course, the difference between then and now is that we turned the government over to Ronald Reagan, who was a conservative governor from California, not to a crazy guy who is a reality TV star and sells Bibles where he doesn't even understand what the content of the book is. You know, he said on a, I love this, I got to point this out, on a recent talk show, a podcast, religious podcast last year, Donald Trump was asked whether he was an Old Testament or New Testament guy, and he said he was an e-books guy. He doesn't even understand that the Bible has two books, but yet he's out there selling them with his picture right across from Jesus Christ and talking about what a great Christian he is. Jimmy Carter was a great Christian. And during 1980, we put up with a guy named Jerry Falwell. I don't know if you remember him, but he was a right-wing conservative Republican who professed to be a strong Christian. It bothered us, especially people that worked for Jimmy Carter, that he got so much traction and was able to label the Democratic Party as non-Christian when we had such a devout Christian leader. And, you know, Jimmy Carter was a real Christian. He believed in what Jesus Christ stood for, which was to, you know, there, but for the least of us go I. That was his kind of his mantra that, you know, that what you do unto the least of them, you do unto me. That's what Christ said. He didn't say, I'll be your retribution. I'll be your retribution was not a campaign slogan, Donald Trump. It's a threat. And that's what our new president is. He's a bully. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But let's continue to talk a little bit about Jimmy Carter and where he came from. You know, he was very, very influenced by his mother, Miss Lillian, who joined the Peace Corps when she was an elderly lady. I think she was in her 70s or 80s when she joined the Peace Corps. She was somebody who always gave back and taught Jimmy to always give back. I actually dated a woman for several years named Susie, a lovely woman who lived with Miss Lillian in Plains, Georgia. After Carter left the White House, Susie helped, Susie, who was one of his administrative people in the White House, helped him put together the Carter Library. And she lived with Miss Lillian for several months and would go from Miss Lillian's house over to Carter's house and work on the library every day. And she would always tell me what a wonderful, wonderful person Miss Lillian was and how she had influenced her life. And she was really, really a dominating influence in Jimmy Carter's life. He was connected to her till the day she died. Like I said, he focused on reducing the deficit and inflation and trying to make the world better, the country better for working people. In 1978, he instituted a $19 billion tax cut. And all of this, I think, came from his solid Christian belief and his mother's teaching that you should always reach out to those who are less fortunate. You know, we had a guest on our show earlier in the year last year, and this year rather, in 2024, who actually attended one of his Sunday school classes. Jimmy Carter taught Sunday school until he went into hospice, where he was almost 3 years in hospice. So I hope that I understand that he passed with family around him, which is the way it should be. He was a wonderful man, and his mother was a great influence in his life, but also his wife. You know, Rosalind Carter was just the most amazing woman. And I must say that President Carter didn't have the best people skills. He wasn't the warm, fuzzy type. But Mrs. Carter was one of the most gracious people I ever met. And I'm going to tell you a little story now that I love to tell her about our interaction. My interaction with the First Lady. When I was 27 years old, I worked for the Democratic Party, and I went to a dinner, the President's Dinner, which was our most important dinner of the year. I went, and I went in my rented tuxedo, and I got there, and my boss said, "You're going to introduce people to the President of the United States tonight." And I said, "What?" He said, "You're going to introduce people to the President of the United States tonight." Now, I had never met the President of the United States personally, and I was just nervous as hell. Sweating bullets, I'm sure. They gave me a list of names, and they said, "It's very easy. Mike, you just stand there. They come off stage. We're going to give them an award. They're going to walk off stage. You're going to say, Mr. President, this is Joe Blow. Joe Blow. This is the President of the United States and Mrs. Carter." So I walked around backstage with my little list of names and made sure I knew how to pronounce each one of them. There were about a dozen people, I think. And I was backstage with maybe, I don't know, 30 or 40 different people when the President of the United States and Mrs. Carter walked in. As soon as they walked in, everybody walked out. the Secret Service cleared the entire room, backstage area, and the only people backstage were me, the president, Mrs. Carter, and a handful of Secret Service agents who were in the background somewhere. You could barely see them, but they were there. So then I was very nervous. I was kind of on center stage with the president and Mrs. Carter. So they came off. They gave these people awards. They came off stage. I said, "Mr. President, this is Joe Blow. Joe Blow, this is Mr. This is the President of the United States and Mrs. Carter." But little did I understand before it started that all these people had raised $100,000 or more for the president, so he knew them all personally. So in the middle of each introduction, they were already hugging each other and shaking hands, and I never really got all the words out properly until they interacted. I was very nervous. I stumbled. And then when it was all over, the president and Mrs. Carter were announced. They were about to walk on stage when I felt a tug on the back of my tuxedo. I turned around, and Mrs. Carter, who obviously noticed how nervous I was, said to me, "You did a very good job. Thank you." And that's who she was. She was this lovely, gracious lady. I couldn't even believe that she noticed. I don't think the president even noticed that I was there. But I couldn't believe that she not only noticed, but she reached out to me to try to make me feel better. She was such a lovely lady. And these are the people that I come from. Not Donald Trump, not Melania Trump, not these people that are self-centered and concerned only about themselves. I come from a place where we cared about the people that were less fortunate and all the people around us. And now we're walking into a new age. But there is one thing that was similar. The country was dissatisfied, and that's why we elected Jimmy Carter. So Donald Trump has, of course, made a parallel between him and Jimmy Carter. It's ridiculous. But there is the same dynamic that pushed Trump into the White House, pushed Carter into the White House. We were not satisfied. And this is something that the Democrats have forgotten. The Democrats have gotten to a position today where they believe they know better than everybody, and it annoys the electorate. They've forgotten what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck. They don't understand that it doesn't matter how low unemployment is and how well the stock market's doing if the price of bread and the price of gas are too high, because that's the way most people rate the economy. They don't look at the stock market. They don't look at unemployment. You know, we used to say unemployment is 100% if you don't have a job. And that's true. When you're out of work, you're concerned about the unemployment rate. Or the, you know, when you want to buy a house, you're concerned about the mortgage rate. But otherwise, you're really more concerned about everyday issues, bread, gas, how much it costs to rent or buy a place to live, what it costs to put your kids through school. These are the things that we care about, and these are the issues that we need to address. And the Democrats have gone overboard with progressive ideas, I think, like ranked choice voting, transgenders playing in women's sports, pushing an agenda which may be very high-minded. I believe it is, and I agree with much of it, but we've forgotten what it's like to be regular people in America. Now, I know Don is out there somewhere, and from time to time, Don comes on as my co-host to be counterpoint, and I'd love to hear what he has to say. Don, are you there?
Well, happy New Year to you and your audience.
Happy New Year.
Happy holidays. Year. Merry Christmas, and thank you for inviting me on your show.
Did you have a nice holiday? Let's start there. Did you have a nice holiday with family and friends there in Texas?
You know, I did. My daughter and her future husband, I guess they're getting engaged.
Cool.
Yeah, they came and they're staying with us for a week. So that was a really nice treat. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. I love the holidays when the kids are around.
Yeah, I have my two kids flying in from Denver and Chicago, my daughters, and my son lives here in Washington, and we all spent together. Of course, both daughters have dumped me now because they wanted to get out of town before they had to spend New Year's Eve with their elderly parents. You know, they're, my one daughter went to New York to see friends, and my other daughter went back home to Denver. I'm sure they'll be doing something on Tuesday night, and they didn't want to be stuck with mom and dad who can barely make it. We're lucky. We have to take a nap if we want to stay up and watch the ball drop. You know, it's gotten so sad. I remember the days when the party didn't even start till midnight.
Right.
You know, and now it's like, oh my God, it's 11:59. Come on, let's get this over with. But I'm glad you had a happy holiday.
Thank
so
you.
How are things? Thank you. How you host so many shows? What are the feelings that you see people having going into 2025? Are people hopeful, you think?
You know, I think you called it out right. People have been dissatisfied, and in fact, they've been dissatisfied to the point they've gotten quite angry and rebellious, and. And I think they're seeing that any change is better than what they had. So, again, that's likely reason why Trump got in, because from what I hear from most of the corners of the world are, you know, people are a little bit, well, disillusioned, dissatisfied. They've been almost in a dystopian environment that how it got created, who knows, but it's been kind of an envelope around the people, and they want change. They want radical change. I mean, you get people to a point where they're not being heard, they're not being listened to, their lives are meaningless, things seem to be getting worse for them, prices are getting higher, they can't own their own homes, prices have gone out of sight. It's these things that, you know, tend to make the people very rebellious and angry, and they then want real change. And will Trump bring that? I hope he does. I don't know. You know, again, Trump's a statesman. You know, when he was in government, he spent more money than the previous presidents. Government didn't get smaller, it got bigger. No matter, even the things he promised never happened. All, you know, many of the promises he made, we never saw the fruition of them. Is that going to change during this coming term? I hope it does. I think he was a newbie then. He's no longer a newbie. He's got his, you know, he's got a little bit of experience now. He understands it a bit more. And can he pull through some of the changes that I think the people want to see, which, for instance, would be limited government, get the government out of our hair. We've got tough lives to live. We're not making it. It's not as easy as it was before. Get this federal bureaucracy out of our hair and out of our minds, because they've been quite Orwellian. And can he make that happen? I hope so.
Well, I got to tell you, first of all, saying that it's Orwellian, you know, I just finished reading Animal Farm. I'm about to start 1984. It's a little scary. I had some friend tell me the other day that he started reading 1984 and he had to put it down because he was so scared that everything in the book had come to pass, you know. But yeah, I get it. And I don't think the Democrats really do. And I hope that our show, as a voice in America, can bring us around a little bit.
I hope so,
to some of the things that you talked to.
Well, the Democrats used
about.
To be the people's party. They
yeah,
used to
they
care
did.
About the people. They used to listen to the people. They, you know, many of those people that are in Trump's cabinet or in his circle, let's say, were Democrats, and the Democrat was the party of the people. Now things have shifted, and it seems that they've forgotten who the people are. You say they've forgotten, you know, what it's like to earn a paycheck or live paycheck to paycheck, but between you and I think it's gotten a little worse than that. I think the Democrat Party is at the point where they just don't care anymore. It's not that they've forgotten so much. It's that they don't want to listen to the people anymore. They have their own machinations, their own ideas, and they're going to see them through come hell or high water. And that's upsetting. When they work for us, and yet we give them the mantle, and they take it to do their own bidding, regardless of what we insist on, yeah, that's a little maddening.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, one of the things that really troubled me is that I'm a former Teamster. My first decent job I ever had in my life was as a delivery truck driver and a member of the Teamsters Union. First sick leave I ever got, first, you know, overtime I ever got. It was really the best job I ever had as a young man. And the Teamsters have never even attended the Republican convention. And the president of the Teamsters Union spoke at the Republican convention this year. I was flabbergasted by that, you know, and that's what the Democrats haven't realized yet, I think, is that they've lost all the people you're talking about, organized labor, young people, black people. I don't know how black people voted for Donald Trump. I mean, obviously the majority of black people voted for the Democratic candidate, Kamala Harris. But I mean, if you're black and you're in America and you don't understand that this man doesn't like black people, you're not very smart. We've lost these people. And I think just what you're saying, I think more than people are attracted to Donald Trump for who he was, they were, you know, not attracted to the Democratic candidate. We had right. Kamala Harris was not the greatest candidate.
No,
you know,
I
really
mean, that right,
her.
Right. That was we a slap.
Really
that was a slap. She was an actual slap to the faces
yeah, she,
of the people.
She, right. She was the only candidate that we could pick with 10 weeks left.
Right.
After
right. Right.
Our candidate Joe Biden stepped right. down. And I think she did an admirable, you know, as good a job as she could have done, but she wasn't the right person.
Right.
You
right.
know, and Trump was much more dynamic, promised. I mean, it's crazy the things that people overlooked with him. They eat dogs and cats. We're giving our nuclear codes to a guy that told everybody they were eating our dogs and cats. I mean, people ignore everything he says. I mean, it's crazy to me. But right. they went for style over substance. You know, James Clyburn, he's a great, I'm sure is in mourning tonight because he's a senator from Georgia, said just a few days ago that they chose style over, style over substance. And they did. They went to a man who knew, who was a reality TV star. Isn't it funny that we lost both times that we had these great losses with Jimmy Carter and Joe Biden to a guy that was an actor in the first right. place. Right. And in the second place was a reality TV star. You know, right. look, I think that I really understand Donald Trump because I was raised by a con man. My father was a con man. My father was like Donald Trump at a much lower level, at a nickel and dime level. You know, he was never, he spent more time running away from his bankrupt businesses, but did the same thing Trump did. Started a bunch of businesses, left other people holding the bag, moved on, you know, and my father had this ability that he could look you straight in the eye after taking several thousand dollars from you and say, Don, you're going to be first one to get your money back.
Right.
I promise you, buddy.
Right, right.
And lying all the time, knowing that he was lying. And most people believed him because most people can't do that.
Right.
Most people can't look at you in the eye and bald-faced lie to you, you know?
Right.
So they, if you say things with sincerity and, you know, and it was certainly a lesson that my father taught me. And maybe that's how I became the senator from D.C. because, you know, I'm all show and no go. I have no power, as you know. I have no seat in Congress. They don't even pay me. But I did this because I wanted to do something substantial in my life, make a change for the better. This is how I come out of the Carter era. I want to make things better, and I wanted to make things better for the people that live in Washington, D.C. that don't have the same rights that other people have. But right. when I go out on the road or I go to a meeting or I go to testify, recently testified in Nebraska before the Senate, I act like a senator. That was something my father taught me. If people believe what they see. So when I show up, I've never appeared in public without a suit and tie on. I've never, you know, I always show up with the right decorum and I understand what the procedures are and I act in a particular way and I study to make sure that whatever I'm doing comes off like I think a United States senator would. You know, it's funny. When I first started this, I used to sell men's clothes for a living. That's how I worked through my way through college and graduate school. So I don't think I've ever paid more than $35 for a necktie in my whole life. You know, I'm just offended when they charge more than that. But when I first started working and going up to the Hill, I realized that some senators wore nice suits. Some senators didn't. Look at Fetterman. He dresses like he's on his way to
right.
play soccer.
Right.
But the one thing I noticed about them is they all wore really nice ties. And I think that's because, you know, they're normally shot from the waist up, right, on TV and stuff. So I went out, I bit the bullet, and I spent $150 on a tie. It was like every time I wore it, I took it off immediately when I got home. I preserved it. I didn't want anything to happen to it, you know. But I did. I bought a couple of good ties, and I always wear them. But that was something my dad taught me, that you know, people—
You got to look the part.
Right. You got to look the part. And if you look the part, they believe you.
Right.
You know, so— I think that was Donald Trump too. He came right. off.
He dresses for success. He gives the
and then he came right. off. Yeah, and he came off as a dynamic leader.
Right.
You know, beyond the way he dresses, but he came off as a as a go getter and somebody that was going to shake things up and somebody
right.
that was going to. Whereas Kamala Harris did not.
Right.
She came off. We talked about democracy, and you know what? Again, democracy is an ethereal. Something ethereal to most people. It's something they study in school. It's not something they fully understand, maybe, and it's not something that they see affecting their lives every day. And instead of talking about the price of gas, the price of bread, all of which is coming down, by the way. The price of gas is coming down now. It's ironic. Trump will get credit for that. But, they didn't talk about that. They talked about our democracy was at stake. And most people don't see the way democracy intervenes in their lives. So it wasn't important to them. It wasn't something palatable something that they saw as affecting their daily lives. And they said, yeah, we care more about shaking things up. And I don't think we understand that. I hope that our show will be able to infuse some of that understanding back into the Liberal Democratic Party. For
well
those
said.
Who don't know, I'm no longer a senator as of Thursday. I didn't run for re-election. They've elected a new guy. I will no longer serve starting on this Thursday. My term is up January 2nd. So I go. I'm happy to retire. 71 years old. My wife and I are trying to sell our house, and we're going to move, and we're going to move to a little island in the Chesapeake Bay. It
sounds nice. Like a lot of,
yeah, and we're both looking forward to that. But I still have a voice, and I'm going to keep the podcast going as long as I can. It's going to be new. Don, we're going to get we're looking for a new theme song. If you're out there, call in. Tell us what you think. I'm thinking of maybe I Won't Back Down I don't know. I don't know what a new theme song should be, but we're certainly going to try to be the new voice of, you know, the Democratic Party, I think. You know, we want to make America think again. I mean, I think that's the important thing. You know, our show, Don, you know this, you listen every week. Our show has been about bringing people on to tell you what they do and how they feel and what they think. We're not here to try to uncover. We're not investigative reporters. We're not asking the hard questions. We're having people on our show and to tell us how they feel and what they think is going on. And look at the people that we've had. We've had Dan Rather. We've had other major journalists from the New York Times and the Washington Post. We've had governors. We've had senators. We've had congressmen. We've had all these really, really great guests. And I hope as I retire that I'll still be able to get these kind of guests, that they'll still be able to talk. And I hope America will listen, because I think part of the problem is that we all get lost in the din and all the commotion that goes on around all this stuff. We all go down these little rabbit holes on social media these days, and we don't get a chance to hear from people who have been there and have done that. And I hope our show will be able to reinvigorate that kind of conversation. We're going to have a new co-host from time to time. Her name is Liberty Jones. She's a college student in America. I've decided to ask her to be one of my co-hosts. We're going to have more than one co-host this year, I think. We're going to bring out back some old co-hosts like Maria Sanchez and maybe some other people. But we're going to have Liberty on a lot, I think. I hope. We're going to see how it works, because she's a college student, and I don't know how much she's willing to dedicate to this, but she's brilliant, and she's exactly, God, Don, this is so hard for me to say, she's exactly 50 years younger than I am.
Oh, wow. So perfect.
So she has a totally different perspective. You know, if there's three rules that I've lived my life by, one of them is Einstein's theory of relativity, which is what you see depends on where you stand juxtaposed to what you're looking at. And she'll be looking at things, I can tell you, completely differently than I have. We've worked together before, and she really is great, and she has a different a perspective on things. And she's a Texan, Don.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah,
born in Texas. But anyway, we're going to have her, and we're going to have a lot of new, interesting guests, I think. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And this is all going to start January 12th.
Fantastic.
Now, because Don is a great salesman, he's convinced me to go out and get all this like super production equipment that I've been staring at for 2 weeks, trying to figure out how the hell to work it. So I'm going to need some help from him and other people to upgrade the show. But we're really going to try to do that. We're really proud of the show that we put together for 11 years, Don. You know,
it's fabulous. You've been just giving her. And the beauty is next year we're going to be opening up to a whole new slew of forums. you know, even some of the alternative media forums like Rumble will be on there with every show.
Cool.
And we'll be on major networks all over. This is all coming, folks. We've spent a lot of time and effort and money into this build out, and we're going to be rolling it out in stages starting the first quarter of next year. And we're excited because it's a labor of love for us. We just love bringing news and people together. And it's, you know, it's something that has always tickled my brother and I, and we're just so happy we can be a part of something like this and to have you with us, continually growing with us, Senator Brown, is a dream come true.
Well, and for me too, let me thank both you guys, for, you know, being the guys that I reached out to that reached back to me when nobody else was out there doing it. You know, 11 years ago, the only reason I did this, people said to me all the time, well, why didn't you try to put on a regular radio show? And I'm like, because it was too damn much money. I didn't have any money. And 11 years ago, I paid for everything. The government over the last, you know, 8 or 9 years has picked up the tab for things for my expenses. But prior to that, for the first 9 years I had this job, I've been doing this for 18 years. And for the first 9 years I had the job, there was no money. I had to pay for everything out of my own pocket. And so you guys made it economically affordable for me to do this show. And you've always been supportive. And the show's become what it's become in large part because of your effort. So I appreciate all that.
I appreciate your kind words. Thank you.
Well, it's absolutely true. And so that's why we're going to stick with it. And I'm glad that you're growing and we're trying to grow. And maybe we can be a voice in America, because I think we have some important things to say. You know, and one thing I want to say to all liberals out there that you've got to understand, when we look at what's happened and we look at this new administration coming in, always remember that this is the system that we've all agreed to. We've all agreed that our democracy should represent the people, and the people have spoken, and Donald Trump is their choice. And we have to respect this, and we have to work within these parameters. So this idea that we're just going to put up a wall of resistance is not only probably going to be ineffective, but it's also inappropriate. It's our obligation as Americans to try to work together, because this is a system we've chosen. We've chosen democracy. You know, communism, that's a real easy system of government. Do what we tell you or we'll throw your ass in jail. You know, democracy is a little more complicated than that, right? But we've all agreed to abide by the decisions of the populace, and they've made their decision, and we have to abide by it, and we have to work our best to try to work things out within the system that we've chosen. And it's a good system. So I hope that we will all stand up, and we will do that. And I hope that our show is not just like a voice of resistance as much as it is a voice of understanding. Let's try to understand each other, because I don't think that people that support Donald Trump necessarily understand liberal Democrats. And I know for a fact that liberal Democrats don't understand the people that stand behind Trump. So we need to bring some understanding here. You know, we need to both try to understand each other and work things out. Because, look, man, I got to tell you, I can't get over this feeling. I was a poor kid born in North New Jersey. I dropped out of high school, but America gave me a second chance, and I worked my way through community college, four-year college, great graduate school, started my own business, became a millionaire, and got elected United States Senator, only in America. I don't believe that can happen anywhere else in the world, even in other democracies. So I really still believe that America is the land of opportunity, and that we're going to have to not make America great again as much as we need to make America think again. Think about who we are and think about where we want to go and find a path that we can walk together.
I like
and
that.
I want to thank you again. And I just want to say a few more words about Jimmy Carter, and then we'll wish everybody a happy new year, and we'll see you all next week. I hope to have a cool new guest next week. The big show, the new show starts the week after, though, when we have Liberty Jones on. You're going to love her. She's an amazing young woman. And, you know, we're going to have some Republican co-hosts this year, as well as Democrats, because we're all in this together. And thank you, Don, for all your hard work. I know your son's working in the business now, and he's also great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, and Happy New Year. Let me just say a few words about Jimmy Carter, and then we'll close out with the song that I picked tonight dedicated to him. President Carter, it was an honor to work for you, sir. I'm so glad that you were the person that I had my first political lessons with. You're a great man. I hope you rest in peace, and that we always remember all the good things you did to make America a better place to live. God bless you and Mrs. Carter and your mother, Miss Lillian. All of you added significantly to my life and the life of my children. So here we're going to play you out. Happy New Year's, America. I hope we're all in this together. I hope we all walk in 2025 together, and we find a place in our hearts for each other. But we're going to play you out tonight with a song that I know the president loved and I loved. I love. Here's a classic by Ray Charles, Georgia on My Mind. See you next week. Thank you.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.